welcome into this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lavo. Folks, if you're wondering how Roy McIlroy was going to play now that he has been unburdened, now that he has been unlocked after achieving the career Grand Slam, yeah, I think we have our answer. Roy McIlroy is leading the 90th Masters by 6 shots over Sam Burns. Rex, this is unbelievable. It's the largest halftime lead we've ever had in the Masters, more than Tiger, more than Jack, more than Raymond Floyd. A year after Rory achieved immortality, he has made history once again at Augusta National.
You always do this. I'm going to beat you to the punch. According, this is J. Ray the Great on X. J. Ray, good stuff as always. 32 of the last 35 Masters winners have been within 4 shots of the lead.
There are zero
going into Saturday. Yes,
there are none.
Do with that what you will, because it is a commanding performance. You're right. I think everyone knew that he was going to show up and be ready to play. I think everyone knew he was going to show up and probably be in contention. I think the running narrative was he had two options. He was going to show up and he was going to take a well-deserved victory lap and enjoy himself, make the most of the experience. And by all accounts, he did. That dinner was the best in recent memory. You looked at him around the golf course starting last Saturday until today. He's been wearing the green jacket and smiling from ear to ear and enjoying himself. Or the other avenue was he was going to buckle down. He was going to go back to work, punch the time clock, and try to win another green jacket. It seems as though he took both avenues, because now you look at it from a competitive standpoint, no one is even close to him, and you did a really good job this morning on Live From, and I do not compliment him very much, and longtime listeners of this podcast know that I don't compliment him like this. But when you break down what Rory McIlroy is doing well this week, it's always been contingent on his driver. If he drove it well, he was going to contend. If he didn't, he wasn't going to be in the conversation. Statistically, his driving is the worst thing he's doing this week. He's blowing the field away around the green. Short game, of course, chipping in on 17 today. We'll get to that later. Helps. But every other stat is through the roof. It's his driving, if anything, that's holding him back.
Yeah, and it's his driving, particularly on the par fives. Keep this in mind. Whereas, man, I think there was a part in his career 10, 15 years ago where if he was driving it off the map, he had absolutely no opportunity to score. That has not been the case so far this week at Augusta National. Keep in mind that in the par fives, Roy McIlroy is 7 under par. He is 7 under par despite not hitting a single fairway. He's been in the pine straw. He's been in the trees. He's been in the bunkers, and yet it doesn't matter. He's hit just a single par five and 2 shots. If he's out of position, he gets back into position, relies on his wedge play, or relies on a short game, and relies on his putting. It is interesting when you go back, Rex, to what happened a year ago. And keep in mind, remember, he was actually putting to get to 5 under par on that opening round on 14, mm-hmm. missed that putt, ended up doubling 2 of his last 4 holes to shoot even par. When he came out on that Friday, he shot a bogey-free 66 to get himself back in the tournament. And then what happened on that Saturday was he played his first 5 holes in 5 under par, and all of a sudden, he'd staked himself comfortably in front. So that was 14 holes that won him the 2025 Masters. In essence, this was a 7-hole stretch that, in my opinion, won him the 90th Masters. When you look at what happened on 12, hitting pitching wedge to 10 feet. Then he rips off birdies on 5 of the next 6 holes. Again, doing so differently. When you look at what happened on 13, he was in the right pine straw. Hits sort of a low streamer, ends up wedging inside 10 feet and makes birdie that way. On 15, he's in the pine straw, hits another little rifler out there, wedges inside 10 feet. What happens on 16? Hits a perfect spot, rides the slope, gets it within 3 feet for a birdie. On 17, again, out of position, gets it right of the green, ends up chipping in for birdie and elicits a huge roll. And on 18, it was perfection. It was exactly what he did in regulation and in the playoff, to win the Masters. Nuts a drive, 330 yards, wedges it inside 10 feet, and makes birdie to shoot 65. And so you had the first round co-leader at the Masters, and all he did a day later was come back and shoot the round of the day by 1, a 65 that included a bogey, and now he is up by 6.
And you wonder, and he pointed that out, there was a 14-hole stretch last year right there in the middle, and of course the first 5 or 6 holes on Saturday was part of that. It's going to be telling to see what he does when he shows up, because there is such clarity of thought that he has right now. And again, going back to the running narrative, we didn't know what to expect coming into this tournament. There were a lot of reasons not to put Rory McIlroy very high on your list coming into it. One, last time we saw him, he literally wins to the first tee at TPC Sawgrass. It was a game time decision. We didn't know if he was going to play the week before that at Bay Hill. He didn't play. He withdrew because of that back injury. We haven't seen him since then. You didn't know what coming back, what the emotions were going to be like. You do now. And you just wonder if he can carry this on. I'm not quite in Freddie Couples territory right now. I don't think he's.
You don't think what has Rory possibly shown you that does not lead you to believe that he is? That
oh,
this is
take his history. Don't just do two rounds here. You have to take his history at this golf course in its totality. I think you're being a prisoner of the moment.
You are not gonna like the entry that's in the Rex and Lab newsletter that's gonna be hitting inboxes on.
Because you're declaring him the 90th winner already. What I just heard.
Absolutely,
it's very premature. Last I checked, they like to play all 72 holes in this particular tournament. So I would have pumped the brakes a little bit on that. And I'm not even saying he's not going to. Clearly, he's playing better than anyone else in the
historically,
field.
Historically, folks.
The fact he's 7 under par in the par fives, ask any statistician, they will tell you the most important stat around here is par five scoring. He knows it, and he's doing it in such a unique way that you pointed out. It's very, very endearing. I think the part that stands out to me that gives me the most hope, the most thought that, yes, he can easily walk away with this is his short game. Oh, and man. It's all predicated on the fact that he couldn't even go through how many times he's been up here the last 3 weeks. He started to, and I was poised with my pen, like, oh, he's going to say a number that's going to be significant. And he starts rattling off days. It was Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday, and then I came back up Friday, and he's dropping his daughter off at school in the morning and flying up, playing a round of golf, and being back home for dinner. It's amazing that he has seen every quarter of this golf course. I think that's the most important part here.
Mea culpa. I got hand up. I was absolutely wrong. I criticized Roy McIlroy following the Players' Championship and said that he absolutely needs to play another tournament start in between. He did say, Rex, that he quote, hates the three tournaments that are between the Players' Championship and the Masters. And of course, it's the Valspar, Houston, and San Antonio. To him, it wasn't even an option that he was going
doesn't
to play.
Doesn't like them, apparently.
Apparently does not like them whatsoever. So in that three-week span, instead of not getting the competitive reps, what he was doing, as you mentioned, was coming up here repeatedly. It sounded to me, I jotted down 8 or 9 days between the end of the Players' Championship to when he teed it off on Thursday. So more than a week he spent at Augusta National. Sometimes he mentioned he was playing 27 a day. You mentioned the day trips where he could drop Poppy off at school and come back and see her for dinner. Certainly first world problems. I don't think Sam Burns or Patrick Reed, who again are tied for second place, had that luxury that Roy McIlroy did with some of the day trips. But Rex, I think the key takeaway for Rory during that time wasn't necessarily familiarity with the golf course. He's seen it now at this point, 18 career appearances. It was dialing in his short game and his putting, just refamiliarizing himself with some of the shots that he's going to face, the wedge and turf interaction that he's going to need with some of the pitch and chip shots, and obviously putting on greens that, yes, they weren't going to be at tournament speed in some of those practice rounds, but just getting the familiarity with sort of being creative and imaginative with your lag putting and your putting inside 25 feet was clearly very helpful.
And it makes perfect sense. And I would imagine over the years, we always sort of touch base with players about, are you going to make a scouting trip up to Augusta? Are you going to go take a look at it? And we also hear year in and year out that, yes, you do. You don't learn much is what you hear from players, because the golf course condition 2 weeks ago is nowhere close to what it's going to be on Thursday of the Masters. It's just the nature of the course. It changes so dramatically. But you're right. I think he put himself into positions, and he said he ended up in some really weird positions around greens and had to sort of figure it out and had to use the artistry, that part of his brain. And I think that's what's been triggered this week.
It most certainly has been triggered. Again, Roy McIlroy by 6 shots at the halfway point. What else has stood out to you at this point of the tournament?
And I mentioned this on Live from Today, and it's a conversation we had last night. And I made the point that golf course setup is not linear. It goes in both directions. And I think we saw it go in the other direction. You heard from player after
shockingly, I must point out.
It wasn't shocking to me because I said it last night. Because the point was, is they're not going to continue to let it get brown and bouncy. I mean, at some point, you're going to tinker with it and go back the other way. And that's exactly what they did today, at least in the morning. By the afternoon, I think you ended up with pretty similar conditions, although it looked like Rory wasn't having a hard time. And he said as much. If you hit a well-struck shot from the fairway into the right part of the green, you could get it close. I mean, 18 is the perfect example. He executed the shot perfectly and had a really good look at birdie that he converted. The golf course setup was always going to be the key. And having the perfect weather that we've talked endlessly about only gives Augusta National license to do whatever they want. And I thought Jason Day really touched on it well in his post-round interview today. And he's played this 15 times now. And he goes, look, what's going to happen is what always happens. Tomorrow is going to be tough. Tomorrow's probably going to be the most difficult day, at least statistically, scoring-wise. That's what they do. That's not because of the conditions. That's because Augusta National has this dialed down. And then Sunday's going to be fun day.
I was surprised it was this easy. And keep in mind, obviously, with the late early wave, late Thursday was the most difficult conditions that the players have faced at this point in the tournament. It was really firm. It was really bouncy. That was
especially
that was
on Thursday.
That was when, that's what I'm talking about. That's when Scottie Scheffler was on the golf course. He said it was really difficult to hold the par fives. You saw that on 13. You saw that on 15 with some of the disasters that took place there. But I think even those players were surprised by just how soft, just how receptive, just how scoreable the golf course was. You look at the scoring average, first round or second round, it was more than a shot and a half easier on Friday. You look at just the rounds in the 60s. You had just five players who shot in the 60s on Thursday. You had 19 sub-70 scores on Friday. Just a clear disparity. You wonder, Rex, it's a new competition committee chair here at Augusta National in the Masters Tournament this year. Do you think they got at all spooked by the players and the post-round flash area comments by players who basically said this golf course is already pretty close. It's really bouncy. It's really firm. We're having trouble holding par fives with wedges. Or do you think that this is just a natural ebb and flow? Do you think it was reactionary in any way to the players?
That's cute. I remember my first trip to Augusta and I would ask questions like that. No, they absolutely did not get spooked. That's not what they do.
Brand new competition chair this week.
It is. And it is interesting to see how the setup has been made. But you look at many of the hole locations for the first 2 days. They're where we're used to seeing them. It's not perfect. You're never going to get 18 holes that match up year to year. That doesn't even happen on a Sunday. But yeah, I think they probably listened to the comments. But I think coming into the week, they saw the same forecast that we did. They knew that this golf course could become whatever it is they wish to create, and they have created exactly that. They wanted a difficult test on Thursday and lead into Saturday. Someone told us today that we work with, A-Rob, thanks for this information. He listens to this at 2x sound.
Can only imagine how fast I sound at 2x sound.
Both of us, because we both get very excitable. So if you listen to it at 2x sound, please let us know what that sounds like.
I do think it is interesting, the scoring disparity. If they have a mere ounce of moisture or water on this golf course on Saturday, I will be up with my pitchforks because this golf course
Saturday will be tough.
Needs to get bouncy. To me, that's the only chance that these challengers and contenders have to close the gap. When you need to make this golf course as exacting as possible, because you are going to have opportunities for eagles on the par fives, a short par four third as well. But you're going to have some opportunities for disaster as well. You can find the creek on any number of holes. You can get caught up in a bunker, as Bryce DeChambeau did not once, but twice throughout the course of this championship. And so doubles and triples lurk around every corner. If you are a Sam Burns, if you're a Patrick Reed, if you're a Tommy Fleetwood, Shane Lowry, and the like, that has to give you at least a little bit of hope at the halfway point.
And we're going to circle back around plenty for Rory McIlroy, but I did want to ask you, and I think because you just mentioned it, I'm pretty sure we both have the same person, your biggest surprise through two rounds would be...
I mean, we touched on him yesterday. Your pre-tournament favorite, John Rahm, being nowhere.
He made the cut. But yeah, but you're right. He's out of contention.
He's 15 shots off the lead. That's a surprise to me. Scottie Scheffler breaking a streak of 11 consecutive under par scores at Augusta National. He shot 74 again on a day of when the scoring average was about 79.95. That was certainly surprising to me. We talk about what Rory McIlroy has done on the par fives, going 7 under par in 8 opportunities despite not hitting a single fairway. Scottie Scheffler, who has dominated the par fives, not just in his career at Augusta National, but also on the PGA Tour. He is perennially among the top 5 in par five scoring average, just 1 under par. Putter has really let him down to this point. So I think Scottie Scheffler backing up Xander Schauffele staying neutral were two of my biggest surprises on the second day.
I'm going to go with Bryson DeChambeau. And here's why. I didn't think he was going to win. I didn't particularly have a lot of confidence when I
After that 76, you thought he was going to lose?
No. I didn't think he was going to win before we started the week. When you come up with players to do. And it's because, and it seems to me, we keep circling back around to this. He's trying to find an analog answer to a digital question. And I don't think it's possible. I think the left side of his brain is fighting the right side of his brain. The scientist, which has done wonderful things in golf, won major championships, can't reconcile the fact that you need to be, if not more, of an artist around this place. And what he did in the bunkers is just shocking to me, because no one else seemed to have those kinds of issues the way he did. I think he took five shots to get out of two bunkers, if my math is correct.
You are correct. And I haven't heard a single player also mention the softness of the sand. That was his excuse on 11 on Thursday when he made triple to blow up that round. And obviously, if you guys missed it, on Friday had an opportunity to make the cut. All he needed to do was bogey the 18th
made
hole.
Made a mess.
Drove it right, hit it in the greenside bunker, left it in the bunker, didn't reach the green with his fourth shot, pitched it on, and missed that putt to walk off with a triple as well. And Bryson is headed home early. A couple other highlights that I wanted to touch on, Rex, among the pursuers. Sam Burns birdied three of his last four holes, including his last two stuffing wedges inside 10 feet. He is going to be in the final group, sort of depriving us, Rex, of what could have been a really spicy storyline. Even though it's not like 2016 at Hazeltine in the Ryder Cup, even though it's not like 2018 in the final group here at the Masters, there at least is some intrigue, and you can be confident that Patrick Reed was not going to be stepping down in that situation. I love the way that Patrick Reed has been hitting the golf ball to this point. His ball striking, in particular his approach play, is much improved year over year, at least according to statistics that he's been putting on the DP World Tour. And I'm not sure anyone looks better right now with a wedge in their hands, just chipping and putting remarkably well. Ironically, of course, he couldn't get up and down in the 36th hole of this tournament to get himself in the final group and ended up making bogey.
Hasn't particularly driven the ball well, but I tend
never
to agree.
Does.
Yeah, I think this course, this week he seems a little bit more slappy than what we normally see out of
slappy.
Him. And I would say he's not even putting up to his standards. I think he's making a couple putts, but he's not even putting to what we would anticipate. I'm with you. It would be fun. And still, we have two more days, and you could still land on that narrative, because I think at this point in the game, it's the most exciting option going out, because otherwise, we're going to be sitting here on Sunday night talking about a 6 or 7 stroke lap by Rory McIlroy. So I am holding out hope for some other narrative.
Yeah, look, you have Shane Lowry. I would put these guys in the category, if Rory is not going to win and he has to put the green jacket on someone else, you can make a pretty good case that he would want to have it on Justin Rose, Tommy Fleetwood, or Shane Lowry. And all of those three players are in the mix.
Funny you didn't put Patrick Reed in there, yeah.
Yes. All those players are within 6 or 7 shots at the halfway point. Again, a special shout out to Tommy Fleetwood. Actually made 2 eagles in his round.
Had never made an eagle here before. It made 2 today.
And he made 2, including a 9-wood on 15. That's certainly how you're going to get the ball to stop. Also, shout out to Cam Young, one of my favorite players to watch. Shot 67. He could have easily blown himself out of the golf tournament when he went out in 40 on Thursday. Ended up scratching out a 1-over par. Opening round score, shot 67 today. However, he is 8 shots back. All right, so Rex, so as we sit here on Friday evening, what is going to be the lead when we reconvene in about 24 hours on Saturday night?
I'm not ready to scribble off and just call this over with. I guess we still have 2 more days. We're only 36 holes through this, and I tend to hold off on calling those, because I did it once before a very long time ago at the Open Championship and got burned on it. Thank you, Adam Scott, for nothing in Muirfield that year.
That was my first week. I think that was at Lytham when you bogeyed the last 4 holes.
Yes.
So yes. That was actually my first week at golf show.
So I've learned my lesson on that front. But I think by the time we get here on Sunday, I am confident that everything Rory has done up to this point. And imagine if he starts driving the ball even just marginally better. I'm not talking about doing Rory things. I'm not talking about leading the field and strokes gained off the tee. But what if he just starts hitting 3 more fairways around? It's kind of scary. And those fairways can be par fives. It's kind of scary to think what he could do.
Yeah, I don't have a great answer to my own question, which is why I was hoping that you were going to give a definitive answer. I do think it's going to be interesting to monitor. And one reason why.
What would be a definitive answer to? What am I?
7.
Predicting?
8. Yes. Just throw out a number. I do think it is going to be a compelling third round, Rex, because if he does have some wobbles early in the round, if he does drop a shot, he's talking a good game, Roy McIlroy is, at this point, where his mantra, he said, is just keep swinging hard at it, trying to be aggressive, not tentative. If he's learned anything in his major championship career, is that you shouldn't be protecting, you should be full throttle and trying to push ahead. I'll be very curious, because that's what he's saying right now. But if all of a sudden he drops a couple shots early in the third round, if he gets some heat from a Tommy Fleetwood or Sam Burns, who he's playing alongside, Patrick Reed or Justin Rose, if any of those players are making a run on the front side as well, does he sort of maintain that same patience, that same diligence, being able to rely on not just one aspect of his game, but leaning on his short game, leaning on his putter, leaning on his wedge play. It's easy to say at this point because everything's gone well. All of a sudden, if he has a couple wobbles, I'm curious to see exactly how he responds.
And he's referred to it. And I think you're right. I think this will be telling. I'm going to call it the Finding Nemo mentality because he keeps talking about just keep swinging, just keep swinging. The idea that he's suddenly Dora swimming around. And I think it's interesting to me because he has learned this over time. And he kind of revisited a couple of episodes. He revisited the collapse here. He revisited some collapses earlier in his career. And the one thing he learned is absolute dead stop. You can't protect the lead. You have to keep swinging. You have to keep playing golf. You have to keep trying to get your make as many birdies as possible. Can he adhere to that mantra on Saturday, which I truly believe will be the toughest day?
I'm with you on that. I'm hoping we certainly have tougher conditions than we did on Friday, which was a little bit too cupcakey for me. I was giddy on Thursday night. Mm-hmm. Too many birdies. Obviously, Rory McIlroy's second nine was absolutely extraordinary, shooting 31 on the backside and birdieing six of his seven holes to open up a historic lead here at this 90th Masters. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Chill Podcast with Rex and Lav. Reminder to sign up for the Rex and Lav newsletter, put the finishing touches on that right now. It's going to be in your email inboxes on Saturday morning. We'll also have another edition that we'll be typing up Sunday night, a full tournament recap that will go out on Monday. In the meantime, you guys know the drill, golfchannel.com for all of our latest news, notes, and updates. That's not in the newsletter. We'll also be back on Saturday night for another mini pod. Thanks for listening. Thanks for support. Talk to you guys Saturday night.